welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 455. My name's James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello. Hello.
Distant apologies from M, who is away, about to have a lot of fun at a, I think it's a hen night she's off to, isn't it? Hen weekend, yep. I should say. Which is like a hen night, only the hangover's even bigger. So we all wish her well and send her good thoughts and look forward to her mumbling and croaking her way through next week's show, hopefully, which we should have. Warning in advance that I'm away to Helsinki to do Pocket Gamer Connects this week. Why aren't you going, Rick? Why aren't you joining me out there in Helsinki to go and chat up all the lovely devs?
No one invited me.
Oh, cool. This is awkward.
We have an event going on? Nobody told me.
Well, it might have something to do with the fact that you have to run that Pocket Gamer website I hear about. So we need someone in the country looking after it. So, you know, it's fine. But I will be coming back. I will be technically in the office on Friday. Should be. So I think there might be a podcast. It's 85% sure at this point, just to give everyone the advance warning. I'm pretty sure it'll happen, but, you know, flights can be delayed and diseases can be contracted, especially at events. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Em's not here so that she can be congratulated and lord it over all of us. But last week's discussion about the Elder Scrolls Blades and when it might come out, I think she won.
Yep.
Quite significantly. And yep. We're all humbled that she absolutely called it. And that's going to be our first news story in the upcoming podcast. But there's lots more than that, of course. We've got an Iron Marines update, which is great. We've got news about Fortnite on Android. Yes, it did come to Android. We forgot to talk about it, so we'll talk about it now. RuneScape also coming over to your mobiles, plus the appearance of Final Fantasy 15 on your favorite portable Nintendo console. I'll let you guess which. We've also got new releases, including the likes of Billion Lords, Alpha Bear 2. We've got Small Cargo, Wall Kickers, and more. Plus, an interview with the producer behind Asphalt 9. And he tells us about that control system that got everybody up in arms. But first, the news. Regular listeners will know that we discussed The Elder Scrolls Blades not appearing last week and being delayed until the 7th. Today is the 7th. Let me just get my device here and open it up, because I'd love to download if we just have a little... Oh! Oh, no! Oh, that's... Oh. M called it, y'all. So, now, instead of it coming out on November the 7th, like it said, September? November? Where are we now? September the 7th. It's now been delayed until December. So there.
Boo
indeed. Boo earns. I don't know why. Problems with swords. Swords don't look good enough. Too many swords. Not enough swords. They're having to provide a last minute sword update. I don't know. But we talked about the game enough last week. So just so you know, you're going to have to wait a couple of months on it. But we'll, of course, keep you updated just in case the date suddenly changes in the meantime. Now, Iron Marines, game we absolutely loved over at PG. I personally love it because I'm a big fan of Ironhide and all of their Kingdom Rush and Iron Marines games. This is an update for Iron Marines, which adds an entirely new planet. Well, it looks like the planet called Borealis. So it's a big old icy, crystally affair, and I presume we'll have a whole bunch of levels to go with it. I'm psyched for this. I will pick it up again, and I will download this update, and I will play it. Do you do the RTS-style games on mobile, Rick? Is that your bag, or not so much?
Not especially, and I've never played Iron Marines, but I hear good things.
just me coughing on my herbal tea there. Rick, you must play Iron Marines. It's the best RTS on mobile.
Well, they were the fifth best indie developer in our list of 25 indie developers month. So, yes, I should definitely investigate their games. But please explain to me what adding a new planet actually means.
It means just a bunch of levels. So right. They have levels set on the individual planets, and then you move between them, like Destiny. They've just added a new planet, which means there'll be a whole bunch more levels to come. I think it's free as well. It's going to be coming out on September the 27th. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. So I guess like 3 weeks' time. Get that in your calendar. Very exciting stuff. Now, Fortnite. We've obviously been covering it extensively throughout its appearance on the App Store and the talk of it coming to Android. We never actually properly discussed its Android launch, which is very bad on my part, because it was definitely on one of the lists, and then we just didn't talk about it, or I skipped over the tab or something, because it was a very strange thing, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with some of the debacle that happened around it, which was we were waiting for it to come to the Google Play Store, and we did cover this. Epic went, yeah, no, we won't be releasing it through the Google Play Store like every other game on Android. We're going to make you come to our site. We're going to make you come to Epic and come to the Fortnite page, and then download the game from there using our own downloader, meaning you have to sideload the game effectively onto your Android device, which, depending on what version of Android you're using, means you have to go into the back end and click a little thing that says allow other, you know, allow sideloading, essentially. You mentioned, in fact, the chat we had way back, which was, this is about profit margins, isn't it? It's basically Google Play takes a percentage of every sale that's on their store, and Epic's gone, you know what, it's Fortnite, everyone knows it, everyone wants it, we don't need your advertising, so they can just come to us, and we'll keep that 20%, 30%, whatever it is that Google would scrape off the top of it. So to you, signed head of Epic, whoever it is. And they did that. That's what they did. The game went live. They revealed the downloader. They come to the site. Everyone go and download it. What then transpired was a little info burst from Google themselves saying, by the way, you know that downloader that you were using to download Fortnite? Well, it was massively compromised. And if you downloaded that game, while the game was being downloaded, it opened up your Android device so that anyone could basically upload anything onto your phone, making it a massive security liability. And probably, they didn't include this, but the subtext was, of course, if you'd done it through Google Play, none of this would ever happen, but you know, you had to do your own thing. They didn't put that in the statement, but...
It was really petty timing.
Proper passagress.
Before Epic even got in there, they like Google just quickly going, by the way.
Yeah, and Epic were a bit upset by this. I think there was some specific time period during which you're allowed to like address the issue before it's released to the public. And I think that Epic wanted Google to wait, and Google were like, yeah, no. It felt like a little bit of a ha-ha-ha burn for shunning our app store. This is what you get. Hmm. Now, the issue has subsequently been patched, from what I understand. So it's no longer a problem, but it was at the beginning. It was just a funny little tete-a-tete that happened between the two big companies. I think Epic were genuinely like, oh, they should have waited. And it's like, why on earth did you think Google were going to give you any grace whatsoever, given what you decided to do with this release? Because it's not just the oh, it's a profitable game that would have made Google money if it was been on the App Store. It is encouraging people to open the device up a little bit anyway with the whole sideloading thing. Because you can do that with a lot of Google devices, but it's one of those things that you do at your own risk, because mainly it's how people pirate games.
Yeah.
Not to provide a tutorial or anything, but sideloading games is how you download APKs, and then you have to click that thing to sideload it. So Google's very keen on saying, like, now you can do this, you can put it in developer mode, you can do all that stuff, but if you do so, we will not be held responsible for when you download a great big virus or, you know, start playing illegally pirated games or whatever. So they kind of subtly discourage it, and now everyone who's got an Android device who is remotely interested in games is going to have that thing turned off at least once so that they can get their Fortnite.
Yeah.
The reason I mention it now is because there's been a whole bunch more fixes and another update brought to the Android version of Fortnite. We're up to 5.4, so you can go down and grab it. You've got the grappler thing, which has been introduced, so a grappling gun that lets you like fire yourself from point to point, which is kind of neat. There's also a high stakes in getaway event thing added, but the main thing was just like, we should have covered it and we didn't, so sorry about that. You reviewed it when it was on Switch, didn't you?
Did I?
I think you played the Switch version. Anyway.
I definitely played the Switch version for a while, and I ended up buying the Battle Pass because I got so into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you stick with it?
I didn't. I got to like level 25 on the Battle Pass and then just went, nah. Or there was just other stuff going on in my life, and I realized I had to focus on that rather than spending hours of my time just wandering around a map slowly.
You had your fill. Speaking of hours wandering around a map slowly, Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition is coming to the Switch later this year, which is adorable. So this is the reworked version of Final Fantasy XV that appeared on mobiles last year? Earlier this year, last year? Damn, I don't know how long ago it was.
I don't remember, yeah.
I think earlier on this year, maybe. And it was a cutesy, even more anime-ish style reworking of the core Final Fantasy XV game. So the same plotline, the same voice acting, the same premise, a lot of the same cutscenes, basically, but redone in this super cute chibi style with a lot of stuff streamlined, a lot of combat pared back, a lot of things cut down so it was playable with, like, one finger. It felt like an effort to get some more out of a game that they'd spent a decade working on.
Mm.
But it is cute. I don't know whether this is going to be great news for Switch players or whether Switch players be like, look, we've got a Switch. Can we not just have the full thing?
Yeah, it is a little bit disappointing. But it was also, I think that's kind of what we expected, was that as soon as Pocket Edition was announced, everyone was like, oh, that's what the Switch will be getting then, rather than the full experience, which is a bit of a shame. But you look at the full thing and you think, there's no way that'd look that good on Switch.
Yeah.
I love the Switch, but it doesn't have the same graphical capabilities as a PS4. And that's just a fact.
Yes. So. And am I right in thinking that you can get this on the PS4 and the Xbox One?
Yeah, for some reason it's launched today on PS4 and Xbox One, and it's been delayed on Switch for whatever reason.
So you can get two versions of Final Fantasy 15 on the same console,
yeah.
One where you don't have to play half the game.
And the Pocket Edition, I think, is like $30 as well.
Holy cow.
But it's currently 40% off until next week. So you can get it for like, I don't know, $20. But yeah, it's an expensive way of playing a game that you can buy cheaper and get more content in. So I'm not really sure what the idea is behind it all.
If there's one crowd that is not averse to buying the same game 15 times, it's the Final Fantasy crowd, where they've got it on the Game Boy and the NES and the SNES and the PC version, and, you know, let's just remake Final Fantasy VII all over again. You bought that once, you liked that, didn't you? We'll have it again. Yeah, everyone, they'll buy it. I mean, it's probably a very smart business proposition.
Yeah, to be fair. When you put it like that, it makes way more sense.
I probably won't be buying this again. I still haven't even got past like 10 hours on Final Fantasy 15. I couldn't gel with it. I couldn't quite get on board with that world. The cars and the mobile phones and the weird things, I don't know. It just didn't quite work for me.
I loved it. I really enjoyed driving around in the car and seeing all the things. But the problem with me in open world games is as soon as I start getting like more than sort of three side quests, I just get completely distracted and can't do anything until I've completed everything that I've got on my to-do list kind of thing. And then it just keeps stacking and stacking and stacking and stacking, and I just go, you know what, I'm overwhelmed by this and I have to stop playing now.
So I'm trying to avoid that. I'm playing, I'm right near the end of Knights of the Old Republic, the first one, playing it on Xbox One, you know, the backwards compatible version. And I've just started the Yakuza series. I'm playing Yakuza 0, and they're both sort of quasi-open world-ish, although the Yakuza's a very small open world, games where you have the central storyline, but there's also loads of side quests to distract you. Yakuza particularly is very good at going, like, someone's on the side of the street going, hey, over here, could you, I want to do a quirky, weird thing. And you're like, all right. And then a couple of hours later, you're like, what was I supposed to be doing? Oh yeah, I'm supposed to assassinate some dude, damn. You're completely caught up in it. Having a huge amount of fun with both of them. Yakuza's great.
I've
really, really fallen in love with it as this strange, tonally unique thing.
Mm.
But if you do want to get hold of this on your Switch, it's going to be available. You said it's been delayed for a week, right? So
I have no idea how long it's been delayed for.
Oh, okay. All right.
Presumably it's been delayed because of the Nintendo Direct being delayed.
Yes, that's right.
It's assumed that they wouldn't have got the same boost as if it had been announced during then.
That does make sense, and that was delayed because of the earthquake that took place over there, which is kind of awful, so very understandable.
Mm.
But yes, you do get a bit of a signal boost if you do the official announcement. So yes, we'll wait and see when that eventually does appear on Switch, but keep your eyes peeled for it. Finally, RuneScape. Now, this is one of the old MMO games from way, 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 way back in the early noughties this came out. In fact, when KOTOR came out, 2003, I think 2001 RuneScape started, we just checked.
Yeah.
So that's how old we're talking about. It's been around forever, and people continue to like it. They are bringing it to the App Store and Google Play in an sort of old school version.
So a few years back, they split off RuneScape, because they kept upgrading RuneScape. mm-hmm. to the point where it became sort of a much different experience. And a lot of the fans kind of went, we don't really like this. So Jagex turned around and went, well, what about if we just gave you the old game as well? And they went, yeah, that'd be great. So they've split it off into old school RuneScape, which is the same thing you remember from like 2001. And then RuneScape proper, which is the sort of new version they keep adding to stuff.
I see.
And so it's old school RuneScape that's being remade and ported over to mobile devices.
Got ya. This reminds me of people who still continue to play Diablo 2 to this day.
Yeah.
On unofficial servers. Just run it and run it and run it forever because they played Diablo 3 and were like, eh. So it's a testament to the popularity of this game that it's been in existence for nearly 20 years now.
God.
Isn't that insane? Like, you know, for 15, 16, 17-ish years? Yeah, a hell of a long time.
I was 8 years old when RuneScape started.
God damn. So, we actually played the game. We went hands-on with it in July. Was it you that we sent to give
it? It was Emily. We were given sort of a live stream from the developers. Just me and Emily. It was a very surreal experience.
Right.
Just watching a YouTube video where they kept addressing us by name. It was quite odd. But ooh. I've seen it in action, and it does look good. It's like, it brought back a lot of memories of playing RuneScape as a child. Like, because nice. I played it years and years ago, probably 2005, 2006.
Okay.
So I remember it quite vividly, and it looks good. And from what I remember, Emily telling me, like, it plays well, it controls well, and it runs pretty well as well, so...
Okay, well, you can pre-register for the App Store and Google Play Store versions of the game right now, and we'll let you know as soon as we have a release date for it. Old School RuneScape, coming to your mobiles. Asphalt 9 was released a few months back and marked something of a departure from the series, not only in the way that it handles the payment systems and the new vehicles and tracks that's thrown at you, but also the way that the player controls the game by default. I'm joined today by the senior producer over there at Gameloft Barcelona, Ignacio Marin. Thank you for joining me today, Ignacio.
Hello, thank you.
So as I mentioned in the introduction there, one of the big changes that happened with the release of Asphalt 9 was the introduction of a new control system as default, one where you sort of swipe left and right on the screen in order to move your cars into different lanes. More a common something like an endless runner than a classic sort of mobile racer. I know that some stalwart players from the franchise didn't take so kindly to that, but perhaps didn't realize that the default controls were also optional and you could use the more traditional control system. What was the drive for introducing this more streamlined control system?
Well, Asphalt 9 is an evolution of Asphalt 8. Actually, it's the same team that most of it developed both games. So for us, it was a natural evolution to go from one to the next. And in doing so, we were first focusing on the well-known controls that have been proven to work very well for all these years. But during the development time, as time went by, we were thinking to make the game accessible to more casual people. And so we started trying different control schemes until we reached the current one. I think it was quite surprising for us to see that it was quite addictive and fun to play with. It required less dedication from the players or less focus, but it was bringing on the table very cool things, like you were able to expect the gorgeous graphics that the game has, while at the same time retaining the core fun gameplay of the arcade racer that Asphalt is. So we went through several playtests, and we figured out that this was worth keeping. While at the same time, keeping the old controls was also possible to not take our hardcore fans away from the franchise.
I think some people maybe didn't realize that you could switch to the more traditional control scheme, which is something, when I first fired it up, it took me a few minutes. And the game does tell you at one point you can just, you know, switch to the other system. But I think it was maybe people were just looking in the wrong place or something. Is this something that you feel maybe hurt the game in terms of, like, the way that classic fans approached it? Because we got a lot of people commenting on the reviews and things saying, oh, it's gone casual, even though we pointed out you can use the old control system. It seems that people didn't seem to realize.
We put this new control scheme forward for people to give it a try right away.
Yeah.
We wanted to make it like an important selling point for the new game. And we thought it was very fun to onboard with this, to make a difference between the previous franchise. Hmm. And we thought that people would explore the game to find out about the other existing controls. I think there's something we can improve for the next updates to give it more visibility. So they are right away they can realize that there are more controls available for them, and if Toys Drive is not the thing that they're looking for, they can quickly switch to another one. It's up to them.
So the series has evolved over the years it's been around, and Gameloft is a very established company which has been around since the Java days, over like 10 years we're talking here. How has the series come on in that time? I mean, obviously we'll talk about the shift to free-to-play in a second, but just in terms of the game itself, how do you get an arcade racer to feel good on a touchscreen? What have you learned over the course of this series?
I think the important here for getting a good arcade racer mobile is to keep it simple. So basically what you are looking for is having a console racing experience in your pocket or in the palm of your hand. So when you go and reduce a console experience in a phone, you get to some constraints, and you actually want to enjoy this racing experience on the go most of the time. Mm. And you want to be able to be to have this fun experience at high speed, adrenaline pumping, and I think we kind of achieved this with Asphalt. It's very fun to play, and at the same time, it remains simple even more in this new iteration with the new control scheme.
You've obviously adopted the free-to-play system since around about the middle of Asphalt 8. It was released as a premium game, but it then shifted to become free-to-play halfway through, which is always something that we discuss over on Pocket Gamer, because we feel that free-to-play can work, and equally it cannot work, depending on how it's implemented. And one of the things that always seems to show is whether the game was built to be free-to-play, or whether someone panicked halfway through development and went, oh no, and switched it to free-to-play. And you can still see the legacy of the old premium system, the premium architecture there. When you released Asphalt 8 as a premium game, did you always have in the back of your mind, we're probably going to switch to free-to-play after a while? Or did it come midway through release? You mentioned you made it free for a weekend, and that influenced your decision, right?
Indeed. We released Asphalt 8 back in 2013. And at that moment, it was a period for the market was transitioning from premium to freemium.
Yeah.
We were strong believers at the team side that the market was still having room for premium games. People would appreciate us bringing a console experience in the mobile. And I think we did a very good job with Asphalt 8. We had kind of a struggling with this decision to go and publish the game freemium or premium before we launched it. At the end, we pushed hardcore to go premium. And this we go into the market with a price point of 0.99. That's something you would say everyone could afford, and for this fantastic game, it would be nothing to pay. But suddenly, Apple, after 1 month of release, they came to us and said, hey, you guys, we love your game. What about we have it for free on a weekend, on our free app of the day, or something like that? And so we said, yes, why not? Let's try this. And man, we were surprised and amazed by the amount of downloads we got for free. So basically, at the point we realized, guys, we have to move into the freemium market. People really want to play your game, and they cannot even pay $1 for it, or they are not willing to. So let's make the game free. Let them enjoy the game and pay as they go. And then we started moving Asphalt 8 from premium to freemium.
So, and then 9 basically adopted the model right from the get-go. The way that you manage it in terms of the free-to-play system and how it gates play is using fuel. So you've got fuel for each individual vehicle that you have, which again, I think some people get put off at the very beginning, understandably, because they run out of fuel on their car and go, ah, I can't play anymore. I can get frustrated and you know, delete the app or something. Whereas the actual intention is that you quite quickly build up a garage full of cars, and the idea is that you cycle between the different vehicles, so while one is recharging, you're playing with the other, and so you can play for much, much longer. How is it that you get the balance right? It's something we always ask with these things, between it being sort of exploitative and cynical, but at the same time, it does need to make money, or you can't support a studio. So how do you balance the economics with the gameplay?
Exactly. There is always this tension between the two sides, to make players happy, to give them all the content for free, or to make the game make money and push them a lot. Honestly, for us, we always wanted to keep the philosophy behind the Asphalt franchise, where we had millions of players playing our game. And to achieve this, we cannot be too greedy. We have to spend a lot of time playtesting and balancing the game. We did several playtests. And as you said, the gas mechanic is not designed to be a deterrent for the players. It's designed to give you some pacing and progression in the game, in a way more control for us, but it also gives more value to your garage. So the more cars you have, this mechanic starts to fade out a bit more and puts less pressure on you. So basically, the game is designed in a way for for you to space the content consumption of the game,
mm-hmm.
but also to increase the garage value. So with more cars, you start being able to play around them one after another, rotate through the different game modes that the game offers, and allow you to play almost endlessly.
Now, the series has been alive for a long time, as has Gameloft. We mentioned, like, over a decade. And the studio traditionally has had a reputation for essentially taking franchises that previously existed elsewhere that maybe didn't exist in a mobile landscape and sort of making a version that would work on touchscreen. So I'm thinking of things like Halo became Nova, Call of Duty and Modern Combat, Gangstar and Grand Theft Auto. And is that something that you've been conscious of from working within Gameloft for a long period of time? And how do you make sure that the game that you do make have their own distinct personality, and they're not just, oh, this is the mobile version of X or Y?
Yeah, I'm aware this perception was there for a time being. I think some years ago it was very easy for the mobile games to get the reference from console because the market of mobile was a bit looked away by the console developers. Mm-hmm. I think this is no longer the case. So we all have to reinvent and deliver an innovative experience there in the mobile space. And I think over the years, Gameloft has also been improving in this regard. We are coming up with our own franchises, and over time we've been able to develop on them. And especially in the case of Asphalt, for example, I would say that right now, even if it draws from some of old-time games that are a clear reference for us, nowadays the game has its own soul and its own unique characteristics that are catered to mobile. So I think it's a staple on its own, and it's a reference for the arcade racing segment in mobile.
And you mentioned the idea of the game being sort of a live service, something that on it goes on for you know months to come. Presumably, you have a bunch of content coming up for Asphalt 9 as well. Is there any of it you can talk about at this stage, or is it all under wraps?
Well, of course, Asphalt 9 has a lot of content planned for us to go to Kawama Health. As you've seen, Asphalt 8, we've been supporting it for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. So we keep planning to support it at the same time. It's not going to be stopped now because of Asphalt 9. But we have the same plans for Asphalt 9. So to keep working on it, adding new cars and new track locations, other new cool features I cannot disclose yet, but we hope they will be very well received by the players. And I think we are very proud to hear about them. So I think they will be a lot of fun. Definitely, we plan to keep working a lot for a long time on the game and to keep hearing the feedback of the community and improving the game in the direction that they want also.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing what you have in store for Asphalt 9 in the future. And Ignacio, thanks for talking to me today.
It's a pleasure.
Out and about this week. Let's start with Doctor Who Infinity, which neither of us have played. I was downloading it, going, oh, this looks interesting, because there is a trailer that you can watch over on Pocket Gamer, and it almost looks like very comic book styly, which is really nice art, and they've done voice acting, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting, and the voice acting has been overseen by the Monument Valley audio director, and I was like, oh, this is really good. I wonder what it is. And then I saw the actual gameplay, and it's a match 3 puzzler.
Yay!
With a narrative baked in. So I was like, can I not just have the story? Do I have to match things again in a dull way? Maybe it's brilliant. Maybe it's the best match 3 puzzle that's ever been matched to the power of 3. But I don't know. I haven't played it yet. It's out. It's free. It's on the front page of the App Store at the minute. I was obligated to cover it. So there you go. Now, stuff I have actually played. Wall Kickers. Little free-to-play game here. Did you play this one?
Yes, I played it very briefly.
Okay. You're a little bear. You're a little bear jumping up a tree. But you've got a bunch of vertical platforms, so like, you know, poles, essentially hovering in midair attached to this tree thing. And you cling onto the side of it, and you have to jump up, up, and ever up. So if you tap the screen once, the bear will flip off of the log, going from, you know, left to right. And then if it lands on another log, if it hits another column, then it'll, boom, grab onto that as well. And so you can imagine if there were just two columns going either side of the bear, you could just tap, 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 and it'd go up, 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 left, right, jumping all the way. Of course, it doesn't do that because it's a challenging platformer thing. So the logs are all broken up. They're all in different places. Some of them have spikes on. Some of them electrocute you every few seconds. Some of them spin around, some of them are attached to pulleys. There are all these different obstacles you have to get by. It's very much like those simple Twitch one-touch games. I'm thinking of things like, is it Lumberjack? Or I forget what that tree felling one is called.
Yeah,
where you just keep
I know which
chopping
one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Lum. I don't know what it's called. But very, very simple. You're just tapping on the screen. That's all it is. It does a good job of varying the mechanic by the types of presses that you make. So tapping once will allow you to jump. If you tap once and then tap again in mid-flight, he backflips. So he'll go back the way he jumped from, if you like. So he'll jump from left to right. Boom, and if you touch the screen again, he will then jump back from right to left. And that works when there are no platforms on the right-hand side of the screen. And likewise, if you hold the jump for longer, it extends the height of the jump. And that's a lot of what the game is about, judging things absolutely perfectly. It's super simple. I think it actually works quite well. And it wasn't aggro in terms of the adverts or anything like that, which I approved of. Which is more than I can say for another game I'm going to talk about. but what perfect little, like, pick it up, 30 seconds, ba 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 ba, just a little time waster. I'm thinking of things like, I mean, I hate to say Flappy Bird, but that, you know, it's one mechanic, it is what it is, it's just pick it up, chase the score, try and get higher and higher, that's all it is. Unlock some costumes, dress up as a ninja, carry on, blah, 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 fine. It is free to play, there's a video up for it on AppSpire, or at least there will be by the time you hear this, probably. Wall Kickers is the name of that one. Something that you've played more than I have, I think. Alpha Bear 2.
Yes.
So I realized that I'd only played the first one very, very briefly. This is from Spry Fox, and Spry Fox were the ones that did that tree-matching game, the name of which escapes me.
Triple Town?
Triple Town, there you go, very good. Which was a huge game in terms of, like, A, how well it was received. It was a critically acclaimed thing. And then B, I think it got cloned.
Yeah.
I remember Clone War stuff to do with that one, where someone basically very, very obviously ripped it off. But they're a good little developer, lots of polish, and they made a puzzle spelling game where you have to make words, and this is the sequel. I've played a little bit. What do you feel about this one? How does it work?
So you've got like a grid type thing, and letters pop up, and you've got to tap on the letters to spell words and then click them. And they have point values, and then if you don't use a letter, the point value goes down, and if it hits zero, it turns into a stone and you can't use it anymore.
Yeah.
But if you do use it, you put a bear in its place, and then the bears can, like, fuse together as you clear more and more spaces to create a huge bear, and you get bonus points for doing that. So it's all about just sort of chasing these scores, and you can pick up different bears as you go along to give you score multipliers and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's quite simple. It's really hard.
It's tough, isn't it? I started playing it, and even in the opening levels, it's like, unless I just want to make the word buy or mum or something very simple, I'm there, like, looking really hard. There must be a really good word to make out of this. But at the very beginning, the letter selection is very limited.
Mm.
So you're like, don't know what to do. And it's not just, like you say, it's not just, oh, you got to make the letters and that's it. Because it's all arranged on a grid, it becomes about which letters do I need to use now?
Yes.
So that I can either make the biggest bear, because the more space you clear on the grid by removing letters, the bigger the bears get. And if you fail to do that, you end up with lots of little bears in the wrong place, and then you just die. So there's a lot more going on than just, oh, can you make a good word?
Mm. And sometimes there's time limits as well, so you have to, like, race against the clock to make as many good words as you can. It's like, oh, Christ, it's just so... It's really enjoyable, and it's well-polished, and it looks beautiful, but yeah, if you're not big on using words, it's definitely not a game for you.
If you don't do words good, then this might be a challenge for
you. Words are my life. It's what I do with my work, and I still struggle with it because it's just, I can't look at a grid of things and go, oh, this is a word, that's a good word. I can't think of big words when I need to.
Well, that's a different thing. When you have to try and do, like, word-based games and stuff like that, that's a different skill set from being able to have a decent vocabulary, for example, though one can inform the other. Basically, we really like this. Harry did the full review for it, gave it a 9 out of 10, saying it was, you know, as good as the predecessor in terms of it being, you know, cute and endearing and entertaining, but also it's got these new ideas that make it even more nuanced. So we loved it. I'd like to play more from what I played. I think it's a challenge. I've got a flight coming up. Let's see if I can spell good. So Alpha Bear 2 is the name of that one. I think it's... Is it free? I think
it is free, yeah.
It is free. I don't know how they're supporting that one, if they're ads, but yeah. So that's out right now for your downloading pleasure. What about Switch? You were playing some Switch stuff this week, weren't you?
I played SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy.
Good grief. So, SNK, I'm guessing that's those old Neo Geo style fighters?
Yep, those are the ones, like Final Fight and King of Fighters. Actually, I think Final Fight's probably not one of theirs, but King of Fighters for definite. Okay. And this is kind of like a celebration of all their female characters all being thrown into tag team battles against each other, and they're all given skimpy outfits, because of course they are.
This is going to be fan service-tastic,
isn't
it? Oh,
it is fan serviced up to the gills. It is just stupid. So it's a very basic fighter. So you have a light attack, a heavy attack, and you can do special moves off one button. And you're not trying to knock down your opponent. You're instead trying to whittle their health down until a certain point, and then you can use a dream finish move, and that's how you win, is by successfully landing a dream finish. And then there's also items and stuff thrown in as well, so like you have to pick up items and throw them at your opponent and this kind of thing.
Gotcha.
It's very lightweight. You have 14 characters to choose from, which isn't a huge selection. It's not tiny, but it's not great. And they all basically control the same. Some of their moves are different, but they're all triggered in the same way, so you only have sort of a set number of things to do. Like, there's no quarter circle turns, there's no tricky maneuvers to trigger special moves or anything like that.
Got you.
So it can be a bit too simple. It's sort of makes up for that with more chaotic battles and all the items and stuff making it fun and interesting, but it's just, if you're looking for a proper fighting game, it really isn't.
I think it's mostly making up for that with lots and lots of bikinis.
Yeah.
From what I can tell from this video.
And you can customize all your characters and stuff and give them silly outfits and buy new stuff to make them wear and different colors and stuff like that. And that is kind of basically the appeal of it. But as an actual sort of game, I don't think it's very good. I think I gave it a 5 out of 10 in the end.
Okay.
Maybe there's something in there that I missed and other people will enjoy it more. But personally, I just didn't click with it.
Probably not, judging by the look of the trailer.
Yeah.
You probably chose the right thing there. So, what's the full name again?
SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy.
Bam. Good. All right, then. So, that's out right now on the Switch for actual human monies. There's a couple of things I've had a brief look at. So, Trexels 2 I played a bunch of. Star Trek Trexels 2. I think it came out last week, but I played it for the review. And last week I was like, you know, the visuals look nice, and it's... I remember the original one. They've done some nice... fan service in the original meaning of the word fan service, where they've got characters you like looking good, not like Lieutenant Uhura in a One Piece. It's kind of a mixture between Fallout Shelter with a ship, you know, or FTL, where you've got the bisection of the ship and you're managing, building crew quarters and upgrading the transporter system and moving people around the ship so they're all in the right place. And then you have away missions where you go down to these little planets and it takes the form of a kind of very bite-sized XCOM-style game where you wander around, shoot some Borg, collect a couple of things, activate some electronics for some reasons, and then teleport out of there. It's really not very good at all.
Ooh.
As it turns out.
It sounds great.
Yeah, I know, right? And I'd say I looked at it, and that's one of the things was, like, I haven't played it. I like the look of the visuals. This could be cool. Who knows? Turns out, no. It's really, really lightweight to the extreme. Like, the XCOM go down to the planet bits are just rubbish. There is no strategy whatsoever. You get killed very easily, and the only way to get characters back is to revive them using crystals, which is where you hit the crux of the problem with the game, which is it is insanely cynical when it comes to the whole money-grabbing free-to-play stuff. It's just a bunch of wait timers.
Ugh.
That's all this game is. It's just a bunch of wait timers. No matter what you do, you constantly feel like you do not have enough to do anything, and it's trying to encourage you to spend loads of money, but there's nothing there worth spending loads of money on. So you end up with something like, I don't want to play this. And it's a waste because the presentation is really nice. And I'm not someone, I said before on the show, I'm not just like, all free-to-play games are bad. There's no way to do anything good with the mechanic. I'm very cautious of it. I'm a bit cynical about it, but it can be done well. This is how you don't do it, in my opinion. This is the thing that gives it all a bad name. So I would suggest giving Trexels 2 a bit of a body swerve. But, you know, it's out right now. You can get it if you want. Another casualty of that same kind of problem is Small Cargo. And this has the opposite problem, where it's like, I think a good game, which is ruined by the in-app purchases, rather than no game with a bunch of pointless things. And it's not IAPs this time, it's ads. So, did you play this one? I forget.
I didn't check it out, unfortunately.
All right. So, Small Cargo, it is, you take control of a crane, which has got a crate originally with fish dangling from it. And the idea is that the crane gradually moves down the screen, and you have to tap left and hold, or right and hold, to guide the claw left or right to avoid obstacles that are scrolling up the screen towards you. The idea being that you eventually guide it down between all of these crates and all of these rebars and whatnot, spikes and other things, and then eventually you'll be able to touch down at the very bottom, having successfully delivered the crate to the floor. You can upgrade the grabby, craney bit as well as time passes. This has got that slightly elasticy physics thing that I like. Remember Part-Time UFO?
Yeah, I never played it, but I think I know. I think as soon as I saw Small Cargo, I was like, I know where they're getting their ideas from here.
Yeah, well, it's just got that same idea of Part-Time UFO. You had the UFO, which you could move around, but it has a grabber attached to it. You know, like those grabby machines where you try and grab fluffy toys in arcades. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're not doing any grabbing, but it's that same thing of when you move left or right, because it's dangling, you have to, it takes a couple of seconds for the object you're holding to catch up with you. And then when you move left and then move back right, it swings beneath you. And so everything you do, you have to do a little bit in advance and take into account the fact that the object is dangling. And that's kind of the fun of it all. I actually like the game quite a lot. It's challenging, and I say that physics thing is fun, and it's always throwing different obstacles at you. It's not a walk in the park. But adverts are very aggressive. They pop up every like two or three turns, and it's always the same ones that go on for ages. Ugh. And it just gets really obnoxious, completely puts me off playing it, which is a real shame. And I don't think there's any way to get rid of them. So I recommend the game if it was monetized better. And I don't know if that means making it premium or just working out the ad system so it's less annoying. But either way, good game, bad ads. Nice try. Please go back to the drawing board and try again. Anything else that you've covered that would be of interest?
I played a Vita game. I really want to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. So you thought that SNK Bikini Ladies was bad. Wait till Rick hits you with this. So what have you dusted off the Vita to play, Rick?
It's a game called Punchline. And it came out, I think, a couple of years ago in Japan, and then has finally made its way to the West for whatever reasons.
Right. Okay, readers, I don't know if you've heard about this or not. I certainly haven't. So I am Googling some videos for this, which is probably going to irreparably damage my YouTube viewing history and recommendations. Right, here's the advert. Okay, go. What's this all about, Rick?
So it is about your character is a man who, when he sees a girl's underwear, he gains superpowers. But if he then happens to see a girl's underwear again, the world will explode.
I hate you so much, Rick. So look at what I'm watching. Oh, for God's sake. So it's upskirt the game.
No, it's don't upskirt the game.
Oh.
So at the start of the game, you get caught up in a terrorist attack and end up getting killed. And a spirit steals your body while you're unconscious.
Okay.
And then your ghost haunts the place where you live, which is populated by cute anime girls who just love not wearing trousers and lying around with their legs splayed at all times. So
now, I could get on board with that from a personal standpoint. That's how I enjoy my life too. But no one's going to make a video game out of it.
So the game itself is you have sort of fixed camera angles around these rooms, and you have to choose between them, and then you have to knock stuff off walls and set up different things to scare the girls and also make them do certain things to try and communicate with them, because obviously you can't communicate directly. And then you sort of level up as you go, and more options open up to you. So it becomes harder and harder as you try and work out which things you have to do. But one thing you absolutely cannot do is look up their skirts or dresses, because as soon as you do, the camera starts instantly pulling you towards it. So you have to sort of fight against the camera. And if the meter builds up, it's game over, because the world gets hit by an asteroid and everybody on Earth dies.
So are you telling me this is like, is this subversive? Is this pitching itself as a fan service game, but then the mechanic in the game is trying to prevent you from doing it?
Yeah, sort of.
Or is there a risk-reward thing where you do it for a bit of time and then you have to just stop at the last minute?
No, there's no reward. It's all risk. It's you are not allowed to look at these girls' underwear.
Is this some kind of like rehabilitation thing for you disgusting weebs, where you're trying to they've sold you a game that you reckon is going to be all about upskirting women, and then it's going to teach you, actually, you know what, that's kind of not cool, guys.
I mean, you, in some of the cutscenes, your character does it because he needs to gain his superpowers.
Oh, for God.
So in some ways it works.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. But
here's- I just seen a comment under this YouTube video, because the YouTube video I'm watching is of the Japanese version of it. And so it's just girls lying on the floor with their skirts up, and then the comment underneath it, number one, is this game good for Japanese learning?
Anyway, now, but I would like to say there is a lot more to the game than just that. Because it's actually written by the guy who directed the Zero Escape series, so Nine Persons, 9 Hours, all that sort of thing. Virtue Slash Reward, those kind of games. And they are, if you don't know, incredibly dark.
Yeah, I've played one of those.
Yeah, they're games about like people having to kill each other and solve puzzles, or else bombs will explode in their heads and they're all captured by an evil thing.
It's a bit Saw-like.
Yeah. So it's... Because he's got experience doing that, the punchline storyline actually does pick up some really dark elements in it. And there's loads of twists and turns that you just don't expect. And all of a sudden there's blood everywhere and people are dying and all this kind of thing. And it's like, there's actually a lot more to the game underneath. It's got a very, very stupid premise. But underneath that is actually a really interesting story. It's one of those games where you'll tell people, no, I'm playing it for the story. Yeah. And you actually are, because it's really interesting, the way it shifts and the characters who come out and get revealed and everyone's connected somehow, and it's just really bizarre. But also it's wrapped up in this ridiculous story about don't upskirt girls.
Okay. I don't have a Vita anyway, but either way, I'm not going to be playing this.
If you have a Vita...
I would appreciate a woman touching me at some point in my future life.
If you have a Vita and you like visual novels, I think you should give it a go. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I actually genuinely enjoyed it in an unironic way. I expected to go in and find it a bit silly and enjoy it in kind of a silly way, but actually underneath all that is a genuinely interesting story. So,
okay. See, I do like visual novels. In fact, I've just downloaded Danganronpa.
Are you just getting into Danganronpa?
I've never played it, but it was on sale. It was like £12, and I'd been waiting for it to drop in price. So I like all that stuff. I think that's kind of great, but there is always that 5% thing with those games where it's like at some point someone's going to wander on and they're just going to, I'm going to be staring at some poor girl's pudenda, because that's the way that these things work.
Danganronpa, me and my girlfriend just finished the series. We finished Danganronpa 3 the other day. Danganronpa 1 is okay for that kind of stuff. Not too fan service-y. Danganronpa 2 is
Right.
Particularly in the early stages, but it is for some reason integral to the plot.
This sounds to me like Kojima telling everybody that when they actually play the game, they'll realize why Quiet has to be basically naked for the whole thing, and they'll be really ashamed of themselves for judging me early. The reason was, oh no, but she breathes through her tits or whatever. You're like, oh great, yeah, no, good point, yeah, you're right, Kojima, essential to the plot.
No, honestly. In the second one, there's a horrendous bit of fan service that you're just kind of there like, why was this in the game? And then it gets brought up about 2 hours later as a really key point that turns the entire thing on its head. And it's like, what? How did they make that work? But no, the Danganronpa, if you like visual novels, Danganronpa is the best.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm diving straight into, with the Yakuza thing and with this, these like lovely sort of Japanese games, which
one of us.
Yeah. I'll have to draw the line somewhere though, and I think I'll be joining it at Punchline. So that's available right now for your Vita. Remember those, kids? Your Vita. Oh, I feel so bad for Sony. It's just that Switch popping up and doing the thing that they exactly wanted to do, but just doing it way better. Oh, well, never mind. All right, I think that's enough for this week. We all feel a little bit dirty and I need to wash my hands. So, you can join us again most likely next week for some kind of podcast-shaped thing. But in the meantime, go like, go subscribe, do all the things that you would expect someone to ask you to do in my position. And I hope you find something there on the mobiles that you like playing. Go and play it. We will see you again soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.